Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul, in the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign, but to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee, and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign, but to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I am the light within your soul, in the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee, and come on bending knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat
Shabbat Shalom, Holy Angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I am your hostess tonight. The music you heard at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shemshai. And I want to just say welcome, whether you're joining us for the first time or whether you're returning and you've listened to our shows before. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at the different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. Some weeks I'm discussing different aspects on how compassion is in our life, how it affects our life, and the different areas of compassion. And then some weeks I'm doing more exercises, practical implementations. A lot of times I've got guests on the show, like tonight, and I've got a lot of great guests lined up in the upcoming months here. And I also highlight different musical artists along the way. Matter of fact, in 2 weeks from tonight, we've got Steve Halpern on the show. Some of you might be familiar with his music. He's been putting it out for 38 years, and his work has been nominated. He's been nominated as a Grammy nominee for Best New Age Artist. So I'm really excited to see him coming on. And every now and then, I like to put in a coaching night where people can call in and just share what's happening in their lives. So lots of different things that we do here on the show. And remember, when you're sharing your experiences or things like that, that you also help others. And I do have to say we are not taking live callers tonight, so I'm just letting people know up front on that. And also with my work personally, for those of you that are tuning in or haven't listened before, I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday life. I created the Genesis Clearing Statement, which some of you may have experienced on previous shows. If you missed any of those shows, you can go back and listen to them in the archives. We've got them all listed. You can find those archives on my webpage at www.jessieannicholsgeorge.com, and that will give all the archives on that website there for you. I've also authored 2 books titled Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the Workbook. I've created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour. Actually, this year I plan to branch into Canada with that tour. It includes workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. And I'm starting work already on that 2013 tour. Probably will be getting kicked off in California this year. And you can follow the events that are available to register for on that tour at jessieannicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. There's also an option there called gifting the tour. For those people, maybe you're unable to attend any of the events, but you'd like to still support the work I'm doing, help me get out to the fundraising events, and you can gift any amount of money that you choose there. Also, I am in the process in about 2 to 4 weeks of releasing my next set of books, which is based on relationships, so look for those to come out. Again, those will be available coming up in about 2 to 4 weeks. I'll let you know when they're actually available for purchase. And just a reminder that if you enjoyed this show, make certain that you tell your friends and your family and all those great buddies out there on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Pinterest and whatever other social networks you might be involved with, and just let them know we're here and share this information, because chances are there's a lot of people out there that are needing things even if they're not saying it. And when we share it, we give them the opportunity to come in and explore it and find it. And they'll just use actually the same link that you use to get into the show. That's the same link that they'll use to go into the archive. So it's real simple, real easy, and works pretty conveniently that way. Also, they can go to my website, and all of the archived shows are there, and that is the Jessie Ann Nichols George 1, that's the number 1.com, and they'll find all of the archived shows there. Now, before we get started, as those of you that have listened in before know, I like to delve into my book, The 72 Names of God, Technology for the Soul. It's by Yehuda Berg. And I just love Yehuda's work because it's so simple and it's so much in everyday terms, everyday life terms, which those of you that know me know that's where I put my work. It's taking big complex subjects and topics and ideas and bringing them into everyday terms. So what I like to do is to just randomly open up to a page in this book, and it always amazes me how much whatever I pick, whatever I open to, just happens to apply to what we have going on and what our message is. And this is kind of like a little message for the week. And also on my page in the Main Street Universe tab on my website, I type all of the message in that I do each week that goes into the website, so you can always go back and read the message there. So let's see what Yehuda has for us tonight. Let's see what Yehuda's got going on, what our message is. I'm just going to open up here. And I've got tonight, oh, I think this is really going to apply to our guest, Tina. I think this is really going to apply for her work. Prophecy and Parallel Universes. And I say that applies because Tina was actually on our show a while back in December, and she deals in some of these other dimensions. So I think this is going to be really great that this came up tonight on her show. And Yehuda says here, a prophet is not someone who sees into a predestined future. Indeed, there is no predestined future because we have the ability to recreate the future at every moment. Therein lies the purpose of this name. And the insight that Yehuda gives is there are countless futures, all of which exist at the same time. That's right. Ancient Kabbalists and contemporary physicists agree parallel universes are a reality. According to physics, the moment we make a decision, the universe splits, and our alternative decision and fate branch out into another reality. According to Kabbalah, parallel universes grow progressively, more orderly, eventually reaching a world of paradise, happiness, and unending life. However, our own behavior determines which universe we enter. Ego-driven actions keep us imprisoned in a universe of chaos. But the moment we resist our reactive responses, we make a quantum jump into an entirely different reality. Each new universe features a more fulfilled version of our lives. By recognizing opportunities to end reactive, egocentric behavior, we literally move from one world into another. Prophecy is the ability to spot these opportunities. Prophecy is seeing the future in our present actions, seeing the consequences of reactivity versus the vast rewards that proactive behavior brings. And I find that very interesting because our message tonight is about karma, and that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. So it's fascinating to me that this concept came up talking about parallel universes and the choices we make, because that's exactly what we're delving into tonight, is how karma and the choices we make affect our life and the types of effect that can have and how we have these choices at all time. Now, the meditation that Yehuda provides for us tonight is the power of prophecy is bestowed upon you. With your consciousness elevated and your awareness heightened, you have the power to enter a new universe of transformation and light. And the interesting thing with this is when we think about this on a meditational level is when we consciously choose pictures and visualizations to go into, it's a lot like choosing another universe or another way of creating a new direction for ourselves. And so there's a lot of great insight here that we have being shared and going on. And the name, the pronunciation of this name, even though it's called Prophecy in Parallel Universes, this calling of the name is Hey-Yud-Yud. Okay, it's Hey-Yud-Yud. And that sums us up for our message from Yehuda tonight. Again, you can find this on my website. It's under the Main Street Universe tab under my name, and I put up each week's message there, and you can always go back and read it. Now, moving on here for tonight, when I think about karma, because karma is our message here, I had some lyrics come to mind, actually, when I was pondering, what about this karma stuff? And the lyrics that popped into my mind came from a Led Zeppelin song, which is "Good times, bad times, you know I had my share." I think that definitely applies here. When many people are thinking about karma, they're thinking of it as something that's a payback or for someone that has done something bad or has come from a malicious space. But what about those people that seem to never get caught or have any repercussions for what they do? And what about the people that are always doing really good stuff and really nice things and they're giving, and yet they seem to be struggling? Okay, well, of course, there's a lot of different factors that play into these things, and some of which I've explored in previous shows, such as positive thought patterns and brain waves and consciousness factors. However, this conversation is about karma tonight. And I see karma as a sort of energetic channel that's always trying to find its balance. Okay, our thoughts, our speech, our action, then shift the balance as we're trying to learn life and soul lessons. We are given situations, I feel, to allow us to learn and to balance our karma and break those patterns by choosing a different or compassionate action. So in breaking the pattern, it seems that it is broken not only for our own soul coding purposes, but also with the coding as it relates to perhaps family and ancestry. And by clearing it in our own life, we seem to also clear it, or at least a piece of it, as a family pattern. And they've been proving this. We've talked about this on a couple of the previous shows, the connection in the DNA system, how that works, how we're connected through the DNA in our God source, in our spirit source area. And when we live a compassionate life, we store up good karma and we pay off our bad karma. When we are going to learn more about this, and that's something we're going to be learning more about tonight. So it kind of seems like karma has this scientific backing. It's not just this concept out there. And it seems to hit according to where our karmic bank account is. We're going to find out about that tonight as well. And where and when we most need to learn a lesson. So think about, what is your experience with karma? How has karma worked in your life? We're going to be talking about this in just a few minutes. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I'm going to have Tina Irwin with us. She's going to be sharing her work on the Lightworker's Guide to Everyday Karma. And the song I have for you during our break today is The Chosen One. It's by Claire Hedin. Some of you might have remembered Claire from December when we had her on the show with her music. And you can find out more about her music if you're enjoying it at ClaireHedin.com, that's ClaireHedin.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Your eyes shine with kindness, your hair curls with joy, your heart lights the bedroom, your grace fills the sky. You are the chosen one, so bright just like the sun. You are so blessed, be you are a joy to me. Your name sings the heavens, and nature hears it too. Imagination whispers, creating life through you. You are the chosen whisper, so bright just like the sun. You fill my heart
Listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And my name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I'm your hostess this evening. You were just listening to The Chosen One. It's by Claire Hedin. If you enjoyed that song and you'd like to find out more about her music, you can go onto her website at www.clairehedin.com. That's C-L-A-R-E-H-E-D-I-N.com. And I'm going to be bringing on my guest here tonight. And again, if you're enjoying what's going on in the show, you're enjoying our guest tonight, please make sure you get this shared with friends and family and social media contacts out there, Facebook people, because this really is a great show, and they can go back and listen to it at any point in the archives, or any time they can go back and listen to the archives using the same link. Now, my guest tonight is Tina Irwin. Some of you might remember her. She was on back when I was doing a series on the emergence, and that was back in December, and she was talking with us about those influences in the universe. And when we looked at that time, I just want to fill those of you in who didn't get a chance to listen to that show. But Tina is a former Navy officer. She is now the author of several books, has studied with the Edgar Cayce Institute, and provides workshops through Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment. She also has her own endeavors going on, helping new and aspiring authors get their work published online. She provides a focus on helping to understand why metaphysical things work the way they do and the things that we experience as souls here on Earth. We're going to be looking tonight at the role that karma plays in our life, and her book, The Lightworker's Guide to Everyday Karma. And you can learn more about Tina if you'd like. Her website is tinairwin.com. I know it was recently redone on her website, and it's absolutely gorgeous, very user-friendly on there. So if you get a chance, go ahead, take a look on that website. And I'm going to go ahead and open up her mic tonight, bring her on the air. Tina, welcome back to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you giving us your time tonight, and I'm really excited about having you back on. And, you just have so many, you're kind of diverse like I am, so you have all these great topics to work with here.
Absolutely.
And tonight, I know that, like I said, some people might have heard your story before, some might not. So I'm thinking maybe have you share a little bit of story of your background, who you are, and how you got into writing about karma.
I'm like an awful lot of people. Everything is interesting to me. So I embarked to study as much as I could. And again, like many people, I discovered I had some level of psychic ability. And just because you may have some level doesn't mean you know what to do with it or you understand how it actually works. And so over the years, I've spent a lot of time studying. And when you're in the Navy, I worked for the submarine force. I was not stationed on submarines because that wasn't allowed when I was in the Navy. But times have changed, which is a really good thing. More opportunities are open for all kinds of people. But what I noticed in the Navy was how psychic submariners are. I mean, when you deliberately sink your ship, meaning that you submerge your submarine, you have to know your crew. You have to feel the ship. You have to feel the sea. And the best captains always had that gut feeling about what was the right thing for them and how they could best use the talents of their crew and keep that ship out of harm's way. And I learned a great deal about the men who work for the submarine force. They felt they had a successful mission if they never fired a weapon in anger. It was sort of the reverse of what you think about the military. And I married one of those guys, and I've been with him for 40 years. So I wrote The Lightworker's Guide to Healing Grief in 2009 because my niece died. And with the help of my sister and her husband and my niece, we put together this amazing book that's a tool book for how you can learn to heal after a death, what you can say to someone who's had a suicide or a tragic death, how you can help someone else. So it focuses on two directions. I work with the Lightworker's Guide to Healing to Everyday Karma because so many people ask me questions about how karma worked as if it's some weird mystical thing. Karma is simply a law of physics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. But when you take it to metaphysics, which means it's a little bit beyond the physics we know today, that means that some of those reactions may not come for lifetimes, or what comes back to you can come all at once. It's sort of the danger of winning the lottery. You have all of your karma returned to you at once. It's not always the best thing for you. So I just recently put out another book, Ghost Stories from the Ghost Point of View, that came out last fall. And that's a look at what is it like to be a ghost, and if they could tell you what they feel like, you would get to know that, and that's what those stories are about. So I'm really thrilled to have the opportunity to be on your show again, Jesse. Thank you again for having me.
Absolutely, and it's my pleasure. And I read the book, The Ghost Stories from the Ghost Point of View, and it was absolutely wonderful. It's another one of those books that I highly recommend, and I know we kind of touched on that a little bit on our last show, and we might have to delve more into that again in a future show as well. So talk with us, Tina, a little bit about what karma is. I know that you have something called a karmic bank account, but maybe you can fill people in, really, what is karma?
Karma is how energy works. Even the Navy cannot define energy. It is not definable. You can talk about it. You can talk what it does. But energy isn't definable. It has always been, it will always be, and it comes in a variety of forms. If you look at water, it can be ice or steam or sleet or snow or seawater or rainwater, river water, pond water. It's always water. It simply changes shape. It is the energy that is water. And so when we do something, we create an energy action. The energy is always there. Is it a positive energy or is it a negative energy? It's sort of like the Wizard of Oz. Are you a good witch or a bad witch? You know, what energy are you emitting? And whatever you're emitting is what's going to be returned to you in a variety of ways. And so we come to mortal earth not to get everything right. There's really no learning in perfection. We come to earth, we come to mortal life for the experience of it, for figuring out what doesn't work really well, and then hopefully we learn from that, and then what does work really well. And the emotion that goes with it, which is all tied into that energy, it's all connected. So can you explain karma? I guess the best way to try to wrap your brain around it is that, you know, what goes around comes around, and what goes around really does come around. And sometimes it's when you least expect it. It's when you can't imagine that someone could help you, and they do. When somebody could be kind to you, or, you know, one door closes and another one opens. You have to be patient sometimes. The karma is always fair. It's always just, even when your heart is breaking. And sometimes just because you don't understand it doesn't mean it's not operable. Karma is always operable. So that's sort of a beginning explanation. I can give you some interesting examples.
Great. Perfect.
Let's use a Navy example. In 1974, a fast attack submarine, this is not classified anymore, fast attack submarine was running along the East Coast doing tests. And they were in a place called Autech, which is the tongue of the ocean. And it's this massive trough that runs practically, oh, I don't know, from New York to Florida. It's this huge trough. It's really, really, really deep. And the submarine believed that it was running at flank speed parallel to the walls of the trough. And so that was the course that was set. So you have a lieutenant on watch, and they're submerged to a classified depth. And the guy who's supposed to relieve him wakes up about almost 15 minutes early, gets up, walks in and says, I'm going to relieve you now. And the guy says, oh, no, I got another 10, 15 minutes on watch. He says, no, I relieve you right now. The guy says, hey, it's up to you. I stand relieved. So this lieutenant, without any permission, says, all back full, right full rudder, now. Starts screaming that they need to do this. The helm answers, all back full, right full rudder. So that when that submarine that wasn't going parallel to the wall, it was going perpendicular to the wall, plowed into the side of the mountain, the underwater mountain, it was a glancing blow. Because that lieutenant had the feeling, the psychic feeling, that something was terribly wrong. And he took action. Mm. And he was court-martialed for it, even though he saved the lives of 125 men. So you're thinking, wow, that wasn't fair. He was exonerated in the court-martial. When you hear court-martial, you'll think, oh, my gosh, your career's ruined. Well, it may or may not be. In his case, the court-martial represented an investigation that looked at all of the facts, and that had he not acted as he did, they would have lost 125 men. And they would never have known what happened. The captain and the XO were relieved for cause. The navigator was absolutely relieved for cause. And although the lieutenant was exonerated, he got out. So now you're asking yourself, well, how does karma play in this? Well, even though he left the Navy, it may very well been that the karma of his being in the Navy was exhausted, because the reason he was there in the first place was for that one amazing moment. And he earned the karma for acting on that feeling that saved the lives of 125 men. And I can assure you, that karma in that moment will come back to him, maybe in 1,000 subtle ways that he may not expect. But his was the decision of a lifetime, and it changed the lives and prolonged the lives of all of those men. And all of those families got to have their loved ones come home. And someone who's married to a submariner, I can tell you how important that is.
Absolutely. And you know, imagining how many people out there are just sitting in gratitude for that choice he made, that he was willing to, you know, in a sense, he ended up letting his own career go in order to save those lives. And that's one of those things where I think at one point in your book, even you mentioned something to the effect of sometimes we have to step aside and do what might not be politically correct, but is the right thing for the universe. It's the ethically correct thing.
Exactly.
And that's the thing about karma, is it's not quite running by the same rules as other things. In a way, there's no popularity contest when it comes to karma. And this example that you've provided is really a great way of how I think a lot of people, whether it's relationships or job situations or whatever it is, they don't always realize that they were there for that one moment. They were supposed to be there to trigger a change or to have a specific role in that situation.
Exactly. It's also like parenting. A lot of times a parent has to make a choice that is not politically correct. I mean, one of the rules I had for my children, and my youngest is 28, so was that you could not have a sleepover until you were 14. And no matter how many times my kids begged, the answer was always, no, you have to be 14, that's not negotiable. Because it was not the politically correct answer, but it was the karmically correct answer. I guess I've had one too many clients tell me that bad things happened to them when they were in a sleepover at somebody's house. They had a relative or a neighbor or somebody visit, and then it happens in an instant, and you can't take it back. And so I was never willing to run that risk with my kids. And so it pissed them off. It was like, too bad. I love you enough to say no. I have the backbone that it takes to say no, that's not okay. And I don't care if it upsets you, and you can be mad at me all day long. But the answer is still no, because I'm looking at the greater good, not getting you to stop nagging me in this moment.
Right. And I think that's an easy thing for people to do, is to just say, oh, I give up. I just don't want to deal with it. Yes, go. Or, you know, yes, have chocolate cake for breakfast. You know. And it is the easy thing to do, as opposed to sometimes putting your foot down on something or to stand your ground on something. And that is an important fact to bring up. So, Tina, maybe you can elaborate a little bit then for us, since you've kind of given us a little bit of light of what karma is, maybe the role that karma plays in our life and how we can use karma in our life.
All right, let's go back to the quote you used with Yehuda Berg. Let's bring this full circle when he talked about telling the future.
There's okay.
Of a fortune teller in England. Because I know a lot of people desperately want to know the future. Will I find the love? Should I have children? Should I change jobs? What should I do? I want someone to tell me what to do. If I could just see the future for a minute, I'd know that I'd be okay. And part of karma is the energy of making those decisions and taking responsibility for the decisions you make, even if they don't work out well. I mean, that's really hard. Well, this is a story of a guy who was a really, really good palm reader. And this should trigger a lot of questions in people's heads. And I know people who are dedicated to their psychic, tell me what my future is. In this particular case, this man came to see this palm reader, and the palm reader said, oh, my gosh, I can see here in your future you've tried something repeatedly, and I want you to know that tonight the very next time you try it, you're going to be successful. And he was successful in committing suicide. What karma did the palm reader earn in that moment? Because that man had several futures ahead of him. He could live or he could die. But because he believed the palm reader, because the palm reader appeared to be a person in authority, he gave over a certain level of authority to the fortune teller. The fortune teller never read another palm as long as he lived, and lived with the guilt of having assured someone he could successfully die that night. So we have to be very careful the advice we give. This doesn't mean we're always right. It doesn't mean that we don't make mistakes and that we can't be forgiven the mistakes. But we can make some better choices than trying to get someone to tell us what will be. It's a 1950 song, Que sera, sera. What will be, will be. That's exactly right. It's feeling the future and having the courage to face it no matter what it is, even if it's really hard.
And I think that's such a good point and a good example, because there are, and whether times are good or times are bad for people, they do tend to rely a lot on psychic services. And certainly there's place and time for that, but it can also be in this situation particularly, and there's so many times that this information is getting put out there without responsibility, and people forget that they do have that power, that they do have that ability. And it would be so nice if more readers would just simply say, you know what, I don't do that kind of reading, and put the ground down. It's like, you might not be happy with me because you just spent a couple of minutes paid for time that you're not getting any answers for, but on the other hand, I'm going to walk away feeling a lot better telling you I'm not going to do that.
Exactly. So, I mean, I've been asked that for years. Can't you tell me what's going to happen? And deprive you of the joy of discovery? No, I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't deprive you of that. That's almost like stealing an experience that you have to live through, because you have to be very careful how you tread when you do anything. Every single breath you take incurs karma.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend a little bit here and you spend a little bit there, and you try to bring it into as much balance as possible. A great master was asked at one point, what is your final life? What's your final incarnation? I heard people say, oh, I know, I only have one or two more lives left. Like, really? You know that? And his answer was, because this woman said, you know, do you get to sit on a mountaintop and be a guru? Do you get to be one of the wise ones in Tibet? And she just started laughing, and he said, no, you're a housewife in Peoria. Do you know how hard it is to manage a family? You know, to be part of a family. He said, it's the hardest lesson of all to be in a relationship, which is, I know, one of the things you talk about. It's mm-hmm. so difficult to balance human relationships. And sometimes you upset people. Sometimes you may say the wrong thing. Sometimes you're really tired and you wish you could have said something different. Sometimes you say something in anger and the person dies and you feel like you can never get it back, which isn't exactly true. You can mitigate that. And there's elements, just like all law, you can mitigate the laws of karma by certain actions. So... That's what I think that's really where we're going with this. You can change some things in a really positive way if you're careful, if you try to be really careful with what you do.
Exactly. And there's that aspect, too, that you bring up in your book, in this particular book, the difference of enabling and empowering, which we kind of touched on already with the kids. And it's that same sort of concept. We can either empower somebody by giving them the information to change their life or to make a difference and to make their own decisions, or we can enable them to stay dependent, which then puts us in a position of really we're walking a fine line to abuse when we do that. It puts us in a very controlling role, and it puts us in that place where, hey, I'm controlling you, because I'm going to keep you enabled in this victim space.
That's right.
And we don't want to do that. There's, as you said, so much joy to be kept in making your own decisions a lot of times. I mean, it's great to get some insight wherever, you know, you can get some insight and say, well, you know, what does this look like? What does that look like? But a lot of times our karma comes down to we need to make those decisions in order to maybe clear karma or to move into a more positive karma direction.
Exactly. And sometimes, for instance, I know a lot of people are struggling with trying to find a job, and they may have applied repeatedly for certain jobs, and they're struggling, and they're really angry when they've applied and they didn't get the job they wanted. I mean, we've all heard that, and we've seen this frustration, no matter what the economy is doing. And so somebody says, you know, I just don't have any luck. I'm so upset that I didn't get that job. Well, maybe you didn't have the karma for that job, and maybe somebody else did. That's not right or wrong or good or bad. It's like in 1972, I applied to join the Air Force. I haven't heard from them yet. I'm the impatient person that I am sometimes. I waited 2 weeks and said, you haven't heard, so I'll apply to the Navy. I heard from them immediately. I was not supposed to join the Air Force. I was supposed to be in the Navy, because if I joined the Air Force, I couldn't have met my husband. And all this follow-on chain of events. So it's like, I'm not sweating bullets over the Air Force. You know, not supposed to happen. Let's move on. And so there are theme and variation to that story over and over and over again. You didn't get X, but you got Y. Maybe somebody else had tried hundreds of times, and you had only tried so many times. So there's no formula that says, well, if you apply to 1,500 jobs, you're bound to get one. It's keeping the attitude that says, I'm going to find the job that's right for me, and I'm not going to punish the world because I didn't get the job I thought I was supposed to have. And another case where someone very close to me wanted to join the Navy. And, I mean, she tried and tried and tried, and it just nothing worked. And then there was a problem with her foot, and finally she said, what do you think the issue is? And I said, you're not supposed to join the Navy. That's just not your path. You're probably going to be staying here because you have to meet somebody. If you're in the Navy, that's not going to happen. That's exactly what happened.
And that's such a good thing to keep in mind, because we have those variant spaces of, is this the right thing for us to be doing? And here again, sometimes it can be tough to sort out, should I keep being persistent because I need to, you know, that's what I need to break through. That persistence is part of my karmic lesson, and eventually I'll get there. Or is this really saying, hey, hello, you need to turn around and go a different direction? And I think that's where people kind of get confused sometimes, like, how do I make that decision? How do I know which one? And sometimes we can try and try and try different areas or different ways to get into something, and it's just not the right time for us to be there. So do you have any thoughts on that, of how somebody might decipher between those two things?
That is a very, very hard place to be.
Yeah.
It's a very hard place to be. And I think that on certain levels, we've all been there. And we struggle with some things. And sometimes if you have someone you can blow off steam to, I mean, this happened to my husband and I. When he retired, you know, he applied to all these jobs. He got rid of the plastic Navy shoes. He did all of these things. And, I mean, nobody would hire him. And so finally one day he said, I don't know what the problem is. And I said, what's your bliss? And he says, I'm a ship driver. So go back to sea. He says, yes, but, you know, I've been at sea all our married life. And I said, so I'm used to it now, you know. I'd rather have you happy driving a ship than miserable driving a desk. And he was hired in 24 hours flat.
Oh, geez.
And so it's like sometimes finding your bliss is, people think bliss is nirvana. Bliss is just kind of liking what you do every day. And sometimes you have to decide that in feng shui, good luck is being ready. And you have to be ready. It's like if you're going to go to a business meeting, you're not going to wear, you know, yoga pants. You're going to dress for the part. Well, you have to be ready for the part. Karma will offer you repeated opportunities. It is the wise person who can see what those opportunities are and take advantage of them. sometimes we're so upset because we didn't get what we wanted, we forget to stop and look at, maybe I didn't get what I think I wanted because there's something else going on. Maybe there's another agenda. Maybe if I give this thought, I will get a better answer.
And I've thought about that, about different points in my life, like why didn't certain things work out in my life? Why didn't this one business I had fly? Well, obviously I wasn't supposed to be remaining in that place that I was. And if my business had worked out, I would have been there. I wouldn't have moved. I wouldn't have gone anywhere. But because it wasn't moving in the direction I wanted to, and it wasn't working out the way I wanted it to, I ended up moving different places. And when I look back at it now, if all the other set of circumstances hadn't happened, I wouldn't be sitting here doing this radio show. I certainly wouldn't have, been doing the things that I'm doing right now had those other things worked out that I thought I wanted.
The same thing happened to me. I mean, when I applied to the Navy, that really was the path, and it was click, 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 click. It just, it fell into place. So that was obviously the karmic place. But I knew when it was supposed to end. It's like, okay, the karmic door is, I can feel it, it's over, even though I was offered some really nice jobs. As I got promoted, I turned them down. I said, give it to somebody else. It's over for me. It's time to leave. So I started a computer company, and the software I designed would have put me in a really amazing place. And had that company been as successful as the business plan said it should have been, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And when the company closed, and I closed it, I didn't go bankrupt, I closed it, I paid off all of my investors. I paid everybody back. And I sat down and said, I have no idea what to do next. So that door closed, and I had to be patient for months before a new door opened. And it was metaphysics. Somebody said, you're really good at this. It's like, I can make a living at it. And eventually, it all worked out because I really loved this best of all. I mean, I really did love the Navy, but that part was over. So I couldn't see it at the time. I just knew that the company was a wonderful company. I couldn't keep up with the changing operating systems of an Apple computer. I simply just didn't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to spend. So I stayed in that place of as much integrity as I possibly could have, closed it, paid everybody off, and sat down and said, okay, what is the next step? And the next step made its appearance, but it took a while for it to fully blossom. It's like a rose. In a certain sense, the way karma works, it's like looking at a rose bush. Roses don't bloom in Wisconsin in the winter. All the conditions have to be right. We have the right sunlight and the right soil and the right amount of moisture and the right energy that surrounds the plant. The plant will blossom. And sometimes you have to wait for conditions to be right. And sometimes you have to be patient.
And sometimes you've got some of those other karmic lessons to learn before you get there.
Exactly. There's a chapter in the Everyday Karma book that talks about the brother of the penitent man. And we've all heard the story of the father who had two sons, and one son was the good son, and he was, he honored his parents, and he had a family, and he worked in the business, and he was revered. And then there was the son who was the black sheep and went out and had all these, bawdy experiences and brought shame upon the family. And finally, this bad son decides to come home, and the father is so thrilled. He throws a big party for this quote, bad son, and makes a fuss over him and is so thrilled. And so what happens to the good son? It's like, now I know what chopped liver feels like. I've been this good guy all this time, and, I've honored my parents. And so this brother who's just been really awful is getting this party, and where's my party, and on and on and on. So this is where karma comes into play, and this is when it gets really hard. instead of being angry at this other brother, or frustrated with his parents, or even angry toward them, he can take a moment and try to remember that just maybe he was that brother in another time and place, and somebody welcomed him home. And that maybe it's this brother's turn to be welcomed home. And instead of feeling that somehow there isn't enough for him, he can look around at the bounty he has and say, there is plenty for me. And that sounds like it's a very lofty thing from the Bible. Let's give it a modern day twist. Let's say that you're going to the mall because there's a sale and you really have to get to the mall and you've got to get a parking place because you got to hurry up and get home and pick up your kids and you only have so much time, right? Everybody's been there. So this is modern day karma. You're driving along, and there's the spot you want, and somebody takes that spot, and you're just furious. That was my spot. You know, how dare this person take this spot? Which is also the philosophy of there isn't enough for me, which is a mindset. But if you can change that mindset, and you can start with parking and say, you know what, there's going to be plenty of parking for me. I just know it. I know there will be parking for me. And so you get there and somebody takes a spot that you thought was for you. And you go, you know what? Good for that person. I am happy for them. Maybe they have a shorter time situation than I do. I know there's going to be something for me. I'm going to trust the process. I trust the universe to provide that parking spot that I need. And when you do that every single time, part of you relaxes. And you allow more flow to come in. Karma is also about the flow of energy in your life. And the more that you allow it to flow in and you trust that there's so much, I mean, good Lord, I mean, all these gazillionaires have proved there's an unlimited supply. There'll be enough for you too. And so be happy for the person who gets that parking spot in front of you because you know for sure there'll be enough for you. Or the person who got the job instead of you, maybe they needed it in a different way. Or maybe there's a really terrible boss and you were prevented from having that icky experience. Lots of ways to look at it.
Exactly. And there's so many of those little pieces that if we can just allow ourselves, and I call it coming from compassion, to get into that space where we can just let go and realize it really isn't that important that I have that particular space there. And, you know, in using that example that you have, I mean, for all we know, if you had been the person that parked there instead of the person that parked there, maybe your car would have been hit. Or, you know, there's all kinds of things that could have been a different scenario. We talk about that job situation you just gave. And who knows, maybe that person that got the job was on the edge of being evicted because they hadn't worked for so long.
Exactly. Maybe that person needed it in a different way than you needed it.
And so when we can just let go and say, okay, I didn't get this, it's not necessarily about me personally. Well, you know, on one hand, I would say, okay, is there a pattern going on that does make it about something I need to pay attention to? Or I could say, okay, this wasn't the right thing. What's the next thing I'm going to apply for?
Exactly.
And
that's
what
I had to do when I closed my company. I must not be supposed to have a computer company, but I really loved my company. I loved writing software. It was a blast. But it wasn't supposed to be. That wasn't what I was supposed to do. And I had to be patient, which was not easy. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm this intensely patient person. I want to get stuff done. And I thought, my gosh, I'm supposed to do something, and I've got these wheels ready to go, and I have no idea where I'm going. And I just had to be patient and wait for it to manifest. And it did.
And I think that's true, and I've learned too that I've tried a lot of different careers along the way, even though I've been doing the work I've been doing and the coaching work in one capacity or another for for over 30 years, but at the same time, I've worked all these different places, and I finally realized that it didn't matter what profession I was in, I just wasn't meant to work for somebody else. I'm just not. And once I got that, all of a sudden, things that I had been trying to deal with, get into, progress for years, all of a sudden, it's like the floodgates just open. It's like, okay, go. Here it is. Because it was just waiting for me to come to that realization that, hey, you're not supposed to work for somebody. You're supposed to take this other path. Tina, I know in your book it's really great how you've broken it down, because you've kind of broken it down as a weekly guide, but then the way it is, you can just go in and pull whatever lesson you want through the book, maybe whatever somebody's dealing with or what they're needing, and you've broken it down in a way where you talk about different things, what different things are related to that karma piece. You give tips that are related to them, the karmic opportunity that's involved with them, and affirmations or prayer. And so I want to kind of move into discussing some of the things that you have in your book so that our listeners can kind of have a chance to experience a couple of these things. And I just want to touch base with anybody who's just tuning into the show. This is Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George. I've got our guest Tina Irwin, and she's discussing her book and her work in karma tonight, which is The Lightworker's Guide to Karma in Everyday Life. And I want to also touch on there that even though it's titled The Lightworker's Guide, this is a book that actually applies to everybody. You don't have to be a lightworker to use this book. These principles apply no matter who you are, and they touch on so many different areas of life in her book. Some of those questions that you've always wondered, like why psychics aren't winning the lottery, and different points like that, that's interesting. But she also touches on a lot of other things that apply to a lot of people and things that they're dealing with in their life. And I want to look at, for example, a point that you make that applies to a lot of people and not just light workers. And in addition to this, it's something that is just as an important message to keep in mind in today's times. And that one is where you have a section that talks about pleasing everyone.
Yes. That is a really tough one.
Yeah, it's a big one for people today.
I think I give the example in there that if you ever planned a wedding, I mean, I have three kids that all had weddings. Some of them were big and some were small. And you will never please everyone in a wedding. And you have to make a decision that's based on the best you can do at the moment. And that's really, really hard. It is really hard, and someone's going to be unhappy. That's life in the big city, and that sounds really harsh. And sometimes when we're trying to be spiritual, we want everyone to be happy, and that's just not going to happen. Sometimes, I mean, you have clients, I have private clients. Sometimes when they're struggling, you can't make it perfect for them. Whether it's the person you're living with, your partner, your spouse, your child, your parents, you can't make it better. You have to accept that that person's going to be angry at you. That person's going to be disappointed. That person's going to be irritated no matter what you do. You're not going to be able to please that person, especially if you are in a situation where you have a parent who cannot be pleased. And when you have a parent that you move heaven and earth to make that parent happy, the Navy actually has a term for it. They call it Saint Praise. And they used to say that if you did a fitness report for an officer or an enlisted individual and you used Saint Praise, you destroyed their career. I think the Navy's onto something. And what it meant was this person would have been a really good, you know, watchstander if only they had done X, Y, and Z. If only they had done this, if only they had done that, maybe they would have been better. Well, imagine that you are a person whose parent says, oh, you know, these cookies you made are really good. If only they had done, you had done it my way, I would have done it this way. When you live with a person who does that to you, it's called faint praise. You destroy the individual. You destroy their confidence in themselves. If you're the individual who's living with that kind of person, whether it's a spouse, a partner, a sibling, especially a parent, it is incredibly destructive. And at some point, karma has put you with that person. So you can find the courage to stand up and say, I'm not ever going to please you. It is never going to be good enough. So I'm going to be more concerned about doing the very best I can, and I'm going to stop worrying about pleasing you. That may mean that that person is cut off from your life. That's a huge step. But how many more lifetimes are you going to go through trying desperately to please this person? Well, suppose you didn't please that person, and let's say you didn't have the courage to stand up to them, and that individual dies. Do you think karma's going to let you off the hook? I don't think so. So you think, okay, gosh, you know, my icky mom has died. I could never please her, but, wow, I'm off. Karma says, no. We gave you that parent so you could learn to find your backbone and your courage and stand up to her or the domineering father. So they're going to give you a boss who does that or a spouse who does that. Karma wants to know that you learned the lesson of the experience, and you will be continually presented with that lesson until you learn it. And then karma will test you to make sure you got it all the way. And then you graduate on to more sophisticated lessons. I hate to say that because Tim will say, well, that just really feels terrible. It isn't. Feels terrible. That's how life is. It's like if you use the small example of a child, if you never let that child learn to stand up on their own two feet and you always make sure they're crawling, you have crippled the individual. Well, karma wants to know for sure you're steady on your feet and you're walking forward. And then you get to walk forward into some pretty amazing places.
And I think, too, you kind of touched on something right there, is that again, we tend to view karma as like this bad thing. And really what it is it's a lesson. It's a lesson provided by the universe to help us progress. And it doesn't have to be painful, and it doesn't have to hurt. And, yes, there will be more lessons that will come along. However, they hurt less and less, I feel, as we move forward, just from the standpoint that we get more and more conscious that it's a lesson. And if we treat it as that, as opposed to, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, having to pay this big old bad debt or things like that, I think that's a big thing. And you bring up the aspect of family, and it's one of the things I've been talking about recently a little bit, is that when we clear for ourselves, we also clear for others. Because of that connection through the DNA, because of that connection, we're also clearing to stop this as a family pattern. And they've actually proven that these parts that strap on to our inner system physically actually will disappear as we clear our karma.
Exactly.
And they've got scientific proof of this now, of physical changes in our body of things that stop blocking these transmissions in our body. So it's very interesting that it's actually taken more and more in depth like that. And I think moving forward here, touching on that point and going forward also, you also have a point that you address in there, you know, like you say, and that comes back to that enabling versus empowering thing, but in the book that I wanted to touch on as well, which is that of questioning God. And a lot of people do this when they get into some hard times and some difficult times, and they're like, why is God punishing me? And you address that.
I do, because people think that because they're having a difficult time, God is punishing them. But everything is an opportunity, even when your heart is breaking, because You don't come here to have an easy time. You come here for the experience of it. And as you grow and you mature, you change. Just exactly what you said. Let's look at this from a different view. Let's take an individual, somebody else who's really close to me, who became a diabetic at the age of 15. They had a terrible accident and all of these things happened, and this person, within a few months, discovered that they were a diabetic. A lifetime of insulin. But when you study Louise Hay, and I have to say I am a big fan of her book, You Can Heal Your Life, I have a great deal of respect for the thought that went into that work. She points out that sometimes diabetes is no sweetness in life. There's a bitterness there, a hardness. And when that person learns to find the sweetness in life, when you don't need the experience anymore, it's a karmic law. Karma has to stop it from happening. When you don't need the experience anymore, it stops happening. This individual decided that he would find the sweetness in life. And overnight, he wasn't a diabetic anymore. It got really bad for a while, but he had an enormous amount of faith. And he had an even greater amount of courage, an enormous amount of courage. And he stepped up to the plate and decided that he was not being punished and that he would embrace life. And it's almost like someone looked at their watch and said, oh, okay, you got the message, and you're all set. And he was in bad shape, and he got a pancreas and a kidney transplant. And within 24 hours, he was no longer a diabetic. He didn't need the experience anymore. It stopped happening. Miracles will happen in that way. Well, this man was so grateful and so excited that he had been given this new lease on life. And he had stopped feeling punished, and he had decided to embrace his experience, that he was also able to help the donor who died of a gunshot wound move on. He helped that person transition into the heaven world and was able to express his gratitude. I don't know if you realize this, but people who receive organ transplants can be on up to 40 medications a day for anti-rejection. This man is on 4 a day, not 40.
Wow.
And there was a peacefulness for him. The donor was virtually a perfect match. The only way that match could have been better was an identical twin, and he wouldn't have even had a family member that was that close. So it was a truly remarkable experience. This is a true story. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is when you stop allowing yourself to be punished in your own heart and you open up to what can be, miracles can happen because you enable them to happen, because you are now empowered with loving yourself and the life you're living. And no one can do that for you but you. And karma gives you the opportunity to prove what an amazing person you can be and how life can turn on a dime and show it to you. And when you don't need that difficult experience anymore, it will stop happening.
And I know that I teach people that a lot. That's one of the things I bring up with them is, if you're against that wall, if you feel like you can't get things happening, it's about taking that time to stop, get still, and say, what is the lesson I need to learn here? And how is this pattern repeating itself and has been repeating itself perhaps throughout my life?
Or repeating my parents' pattern,
which we do a lot. That is a lot of what happens, comes in from repeating things that we've seen. We see that a lot with abuse, with that abuse victim cycle, people repeating what they've seen along the way. So definitely it is about standing up and taking that stance, and it's about the universe, as we've mentioned earlier, where we have to stand up and say, okay, I'm done with this lesson. I got it. And really the only times that it gets painful is when we're not getting it or we refuse to do anything about it. Because that's when it keeps getting harder and harder and harder until we do get it.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And sometimes the lesson is to heal your guilt. And that's one of the hardest lessons of all.
Mm-hmm.
It's to heal a deep emotional pain. And I discussed that in the chapter 3 on cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very difficult chapter to read, maybe on some levels, because sometimes people say, you know, why is God punishing me because I developed cancer? But instead, because you can't get cancer at the grocery store. It's not a virus. It's not a bacteria. It lives within you and develops because something in you has changed or is so sad or there is a need you don't even know about. And when you want to heal yourself on certain levels, a lot of things can change. It's like in the ghost story book, there's a story about a divorce attorney who is haunting a friend of mine. And I couldn't believe that this divorce attorney was haunting one of my best friends. And when I read her story, when I wrote her story, I wanted people to understand this was not a bad person. This was a sad person. And she was punishing herself. And she would never have moved on because she believed that she deserved to be punished. And by offering her the insight that just maybe God would forgive her for what she perceived as her failings, that maybe she could cross over and she could be forgiven. And I think that we don't have to die to figure that out. I think that anyone who is listening, who has something that's hurting them inside, whether they feel guilty about it or there's a deep emotional pain, if you can come to terms with, yes, it happened, and you are still a lovable person, you can still heal, and no matter what happened, God will always love you. There is a part of you that can begin to heal, and it's a beautiful part of you. And if that is the only thing someone takes from tonight, it will have been worth every minute of them listening to this show, that they can remember that even in their darkest moments, God still loves every one of us.
Mm-hmm. And I think no matter what belief system somebody is, whether you refer to that as God or spirit or creator or whatever your term is, you are loved. You are loved by the great one divine source, by whatever name you call that. And, you know, certainly guilt is really something. Now, in this case, it got attached to an energy that had passed on in that situation. But it is something that we do tend to carry a lot of times, of feeling guilty about putting somebody in a certain situation. And that's where we have to come back. You know, I could say, you know, oh, I feel so guilty for what I did to this person in my past. But I operated based on what I had to work with in that moment, at that time, from that knowledge base. I didn't have the knowledge I have now in order to allow me to function differently at that point. And so I think it is definitely that blend, as you mentioned before, doing that, taking it in, and realizing that we don't know it all now. You know, we don't have the hindsight now in the present. We get it through the experiences and learn from there. And it's a matter of taking what we have to work with and deciding what are we going to do with that. It's kind of like a creative game. Here's what you have to work with. It may not be the same as what somebody else has to work with. Matter of fact, it's not going to be the same as what somebody else has to work with. But what are you going to do with it? And I want to move now, since you brought up that guilt factor, you also talk about a chapter that is the ego of self-degradation. degradation, the poor me syndrome, basically. Mm-hmm. And I actually just finished creating a video about getting rid of excuses. So it tied really well into this chapter that you did.
Exactly. For a person who is poor me, it's almost an attention-getting addiction on a certain level. When you're poor me, it ends up being about you. You want someone to feel sorry for you, and you end up taking that person's energy. Maybe you're not conscious of it, but you're doing it. Poor me, everybody is you know, against me, or please help me. And part of it's taking responsibility for what happens to you, what happens to yourself. Maybe you had a really tough childhood. Maybe there's a bitterness. But you don't have to let it destroy you. And somebody can say, well, it's easier for you to say you didn't have a really tough childhood. Well, we don't really know what somebody else had. I know some people who've had some horrific childhoods. I mean, drop your jaw, horrible childhoods. And they are functioning adults. They have their issues. But God bless them, they try really hard every day, and they don't ask anyone to feel sorry for them. We all come in with different emotional makeups based on one of the terms I call is epigenetics, so the past DNA, what was handed down, our family histories, the family patterns, all of those things that happen. When you're poor me, it's like the world is against you, and you stand alone. It's almost you're isolating yourself instead of engaging. And you have to ask yourself, is that who you want to be? Do you want to be someone else? And is that someone else is a person who accepts the life and begins to build on it, then you can begin to see life very differently. But sometimes it's really hard to get out of your own way.
It's really true, and I think a good example of that, I had Dina Bouvet on back in January, and she does this program called Dream to Destiny, and it's about, you know, creating your dream destiny, basically. But people look at her and they think, oh, you're so successful, you live in this nice home, and you have this perfect family, and blah, 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 blah. And all of these things. What a lot of people don't know until they delve into her work, for example, is that on multiple occasions, she watched her mom get hauled off in a straitjacket. She went through physical, sexual abuse type things, I mean, horrendous abuse issues in the home. She had a stepfather or something, that came and plowed the car right into the house and almost killed them all. But you wouldn't know that by looking at her today. And she did that very thing that you're talking about, which is she made a decision to be otherwise. I mean, she grew up in an uneducated situation. She grew up in trailer homes part of the time. I mean, they had nothing, really. It was a very, very hard life. But she decided each and every day, I'm going to make it different. I'm not going to live in this poor me. I don't accept this as my reality. I don't believe that this is what I'm meant for.
Well, that would be true of Louise Hay. She healed herself from terminal cancer twice. Look at Oprah Winfrey. I mean, she's one of the richest women on the planet. And she had extraordinarily humble beginnings, and she had some terrible things happen to her. And yet, mm-hmm. She's also an extremely generous person.
Yeah.
She's not perfect, but then who among us is? She's a person who's trying. She's trying very hard to lead a decent life and to be generous. I guess those are the things that I see when I look at her. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
And so, yes, you can choose to feel bad about things, or it's like that line from Shawshank Redemption. get busy living or get busy dying. Get busy. There's so much need out there. Volunteer. Get out of your own way and think about other people. When it stops being about you and the service you can do for others, your life changes. There's a happiness that money cannot buy. There is a joy that you can find when you enjoy other people as people. Yeah, people can be irritating. Yeah, people make you angry. People do really stupid things. They horrify us. And yet, human beings are capable of the most amazing, tender, and loving acts. We are a conundrum. Maybe that's why we may be the low income end of the solar system, but we're being watched by all kinds of intelligences because it's endlessly fascinating here.
Wow. And it's so true. It really is so true. And you start to bring up the point of giving. So that's like perfect for where I was going to go next, which is we're in a society now where people are living longer and longer and longer, and we have a lot of people that are now in the position of taking care of parents, much more so than they used to be. And so we've got a lot of caregivers coming around right now. And one of the points that you bring up in your book is compassion fatigue, which some people think, how on earth could you ever be too compassionate or burn out on compassion?
It's very easy. It's a lot easier than people think, and this engenders guilt. To go back for just a second on something you said, and I've observed this. I have clients that tell me, you know, I might be able to retire when I'm 50. I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. And it strikes me that an awful lot of people have never lived this long. This is the longest lifetime they've ever had, and they really don't know what to do with themselves. And so while they're trying to figure that out, some of them discover that they have to take care of an elderly parent, or they have a child who requires constant care. And, you know, people might see that person in the grocery store and think, oh, my gosh, that's got to be really tough. And they go about their day. But for the person who is dealing with this, it's a 24/7 job. And compassion fatigue basically is another term for certain levels of depression, because your life doesn't seem to ever get better. And you have no place to go, and sometimes there's no one who can help you. Your siblings won't help you, or you don't have them. Maybe the state can't help you, and you feel trapped. And there is such a thing as compassion fatigue. You see this sometimes in hospitals. You see this sometimes if you have to deal with the public day in and day out. And I got to say, this happened to me. When I was in the Navy, people would sit outside my door starting at 7 in the morning until I left at 6 at night. It was solve one problem after the other, and after a while, you just don't think you can hear anymore. How can there be so many problems? How can there be so many difficulties? And there's a part of you that has to have an emotional break because you're in a mortal body. And when you hear that much sadness, it drops your personal frequency. It drops your vibration, which means you become vulnerable to illness. So taking care of yourself, finding some methodology to give yourself a day off without any guilt. You need a day off. You're in a mortal body. Mortal bodies get tired. When you're in a spiritual body or a heavenly body, time doesn't exist. So you don't have the limitation that you have when you live in time and space and gravity. Those things wear on you. That's why we age. So there is compassion fatigue, and we, watching someone else go through this, need to have compassion for that person, because walking a mile in their shoes would be very, very heavy shoes.
Yes, and this is where, you know, I think we really look at this aspect of the compassion you know, really being more of a caregiver aspect, or giving, giving, giving. And I've worked plenty of those public positions. And, yeah, when the day is done, you just live for that quiet moment in the evenings where everything's still and silent and things like that. When I look at the work that I do with compassion, this is one of the reasons why I stress it's so important to be compassionate with yourself. Compassion doesn't mean total sacrifice, but it's about finding balance between these different areas. And we have to constantly be replenishing ourselves. People forget compassion fatigue comes from not being compassionate to yourself, by not refilling yourself. We see this a lot in relationships. People wonder why things are falling apart in their relationships, because they haven't given to themselves. And only when you've received, only when you're full, only when you give to yourself, are you going to have anything to give to somebody else. You can't give what you don't have.
Right. And you see this a lot of times with single parents. You also see it with families who have a loved one on deployment. My youngest son did 2 tours in Afghanistan, and we all rallied around his lovely wife because we were, I mean, I really do know what that's like. I really, really do know. And so you can support your friends and family, but at the end of the day, when you turn out the light, if you're that single parent, you're alone, and you have to come face-to-face with that. And it takes a lot of courage to do it day in and day out. I mean, my husband and I have been together for 40 years. 60% of that time he's been at sea. 60%. And so you get either really good at it, or you, it's not the life for you. It's not the life for everybody. Some people really need their spouse with them every night. That's fine. That's your relationship. If you're a single parent or your spouse died, that's another thing. When you're grieving, it's very difficult to have perspective because you wear this cloak of darkness when you're so sad. And healing your grief becomes profoundly important because you don't grieve alone. When you're never healing your grief, those around you don't heal either. It's really, really important to begin to ask for help outside of friends and family, to get some professional help from somebody that you can find a comfort zone with. Because grief isn't here to punish us. It's to cause us to appreciate life. And that's easy to say if your heart's not breaking. It's really hard to live that when you don't know how you're going to face each day. But you still have to get up, and you still have to live through every day. And when you can do that and you rise to the occasion, you really do add quite a bit to your karmic bank account. And if you have children who are grieving too, sometimes you need a break from your grief. It's when friends and family can help you. And don't be afraid to ask for that. Doesn't mean you're a bad parent if you've asked somebody to help you, if you're having a tough day. Sometimes it's all right to ask for help. This means you're... doesn't mean you're earning bad karma because you think you can't handle it. Sometimes when you admit to yourself that you're vulnerable or you're tired and you need that help, that makes a huge difference. And the day seems a little bit brighter, again, when you're giving yourself a break. You can't give to somebody else if that well is completely empty.
Yes, and you bring up something very good. That also kind of segues into the next aspect. And a lot of times these challenges that we're facing, if we look to its polar opposite, it tells us exactly how to clear it. Right? If we are dealing with, for example, sadness and grief, then there's some balance to be found there. Yes, we need to honor that feeling that we're feeling, but what we really need to do is to also know that joy is the healing point, or joy is the target point, however you want to put it, is to move towards that space. If we are angry about something because we keep feeling hurt by a situation, if we learn to have compassion in that situation, we can heal that lesson.
And
so
karma will give you an opportunity. There was a fascinating article in Reader's Digest many years ago about a woman who, through a series of bizarre accidents, lost all three sons, died. And it's hard to imagine how much a mother's heart could break losing three children.
Mm.
And she didn't know how she was going to be functioning. And as each day went by, she just never seemed to be getting better. And several years went by, and she felt like she was losing ground. And I may be remembering the story ever so slightly incorrectly, but it was wintertime, and she came upon a situation where this child had fallen into an icy lake. And they heard the cries, and I think she and her husband ran out, and they saw this child, and they were ready to sacrifice themselves to save that child, and the child lived. And they seized the karmic moment to help someone else's child to live, even though their child died. And it was as if in that moment, the sun came out for them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their grief simply lifted because they had enabled another parent to have their child live. And they felt like even though they didn't have their children, life was still going to be all right and that they could heal.
Yeah.
When you do service for others, when you come out of yourself, it doesn't mean that you don't miss your loved one with all of your heart. Of course you do. You're going to miss that person every day until you die yourself. But it doesn't mean you can't have happy moments. When I'm in Virginia, I speak to parents of murdered children. And that's a really difficult group to talk to, because that sense of injustice where their loved one was murdered is really, really difficult. But it doesn't mean that they can never have a happy moment. And watching how so many of them have stepped up to the plate and helped so many other people, they turned their difficulty into something positive, is in itself very inspiring, because it takes courage. When your grief is that intense, it takes courage to get out of bed every morning. And then on top of that, do service for others. Those are some of the quiet heroes that walk among us.
Absolutely. There's a couple of other things I want to touch on here, and amazingly, it just surprises me how the time just flies once I'm on the show here. But a couple of other points, and we've got maybe 10 minutes here to cover these points in. What about karmic challenges and karmic time?
Sometimes you come in with a karmic challenge. It can be, it's like the person who came in and in an early age they became a diabetic. That's a karmic challenge. And karma says you have a certain amount of time to deal with this. And that's one element of karmic time. Sometimes karmic time can be a moment out of your entire lifetime. There's this one moment, and you must make a choice. And whatever choice you make is going to determine the course of your lifetime. You must choose. It's like the Indiana Jones. You know, which will you choose? Or what path will you choose? And it's that moment in time when you say something or you do something, and it shifts everything. It's karmic time. Sometimes karmic time can seem like if you're part of the concepts of karmic time are if you're in a situation like you're in labor and you feel like it's going to last an eternity, but it's really only a few seconds. It seems like time stands still, and whatever you're going through is really an agony. karmic time can be if you go through a death, the person dies, and you grieve it. And there is a finality to it, as painful as it is. But sometimes that karmic time isn't over because you're divorced. And that divorce keeps going and going and going. Because part of you and that person have not fully resolved what happened. Sometimes you have time with an individual and karma says, oop, time's up. You don't necessarily control that. Karma controls that. How you respond to that, you control. Is it all the same time? Actually, it is all the same time. It just looks at, you can just look at it differently. Time is a whole other discussion. You can stretch time, you can shorten time. But sometimes you're given a moment in time to make a decision, especially people who are in powerful positions. Every karmic decision, the higher you are up the food chain, the more your karmic decisions are going to echo for thousands and sometimes millions of people. Millions of people. Mm-hmm. And so how you exercise that element of time is critical. What judgment you use. It's like your child asks you for something and you think, oh, I'll just give them a quick answer. And sometimes you need to spend a little bit longer on the answer. Sometimes you need to be more patient. You need to take more time. And in taking more time, you will actually save time in the long run. Or what you do today is going to come back to you in a different time and space. Let's use the example of you're a young daughter, you're a young woman, and your boyfriend brings you to meet his mom. That's always a stressful situation. Well, is the burden on the young woman for the relationship to how the relationship is going to work, or is it on the older woman? Who has the responsibility in that situation? Well, that situation, suppose he marries her. Whatever the older woman does in that very first meeting will echo out for all of the time they're together. She will never forget the moment she met her mother-in-law. Ever. And if it's a good meeting, then that's how you can guide the course of an entire relationship by that one meeting. First impressions really do matter. But mm-hmm. if it's really bad, it's really hard to overcome that. Yes, we make mistakes and we wish we'd do things differently. Yes, you can make amends and yes, you can atone. But what if you thought through it a little more carefully the first time? Maybe you'd make different choices. And maybe life wouldn't be as difficult. Maybe. The onus is always going to be on the older person to take the better action.
And it's interesting, and I think that's something we need to be teaching in school, even over some of the so-called basics of math and things, is how to make good decisions. You know, how to be smarter, how to take those pauses so that you're not sending yourself down the bad karma spiral and that you are creating these good moments. And, of course, we do know it has this cascading effect. What we do with one person also affects many people because of everybody they come in contact with, and what we've done and how we've acted then sets the tone for how they act with other people. And no, we're not responsible for their actions and their choices. However, it could make a difference in them maybe making a better choice. And I think it's not about worrying so much about everybody else's thoughts and how we're going to impact them or not impact them. It comes back to focus on the self and saying, you just need to take care of your own space, choose your own actions wisely, and the rest will take care of itself.
Well, there's a chapter in there called Training Wheels. And suppose, I have heard this from time immemorial. This new bride joins the family, and the first thing the in-laws say is, oh, my God, she can't cook. Well, I have heard that since I was a little kid. I've watched in-laws destroy marriages because of their toxic and cruel statements. maybe people wouldn't be as divorced if their families were kinder to the new person joining the family. And make up their mind that, you know, if you believe in your son or daughter, you're going to believe in the person they marry, you know, or the partner they choose. And so instead of complaining about the person, you know, teach them. Make something fun. Enjoy that person. Get to know the person. People have a tendency to hold on to their sons and daughters without necessarily wanting them to have a life. I had a client who was furious because her son got a woman pregnant and then decided to stay with her and get married and raise a child. And she was furious with this woman, and she was railing about what a bad person she was. She took her son away from her. And I said, let me get this straight. You have the opportunity to be part of a family and have a grandchild and enjoy all of that, and instead you're finding fault? And she just looked at me and blinked. I said, let me get this straight. You're throwing away all this happiness because you want to control your son? Is that what you're saying to me?
Mm-hmm.
And she got real quiet. She said, well, yeah, I guess, yeah. I said, what do you really want? And she said, I want my son back. And I said, so you want to deprive him of a life? What karma are you creating? If he divorces her, do you want him to live with you? Is that what you want? And she changed. She embraced this new daughter-in-law and a grandchild, which is a gift, surely, a wonderful gift. And all of a sudden, her life changed. Her son was happy. It's like the sun came out because she stopped thinking about herself and she saw it differently. And I was really blunt.
And she had that lesson
to
let go.
That daughter-in-law, believe me, I can assure you, I know exactly what that feels like.
And she had that lesson of her karmic lesson involved there, obviously, was related to letting go of control and these different things and having some trust so that these other things could open up. Tina, we're really winding down here. I definitely want to thank you, and I do just want to remind people again, Tina's book is The Lightworker's Guide to Everyday Karma, and that's what we've been talking about here tonight. A lot of great chapters. We've touched on some of them. She's also got chapters like The Ego of Arrogance, Remembering Your Goodness, If I Had It to Do All Over. She's got some great chapters in there about being a perfect mom and a perfect dad, which are great. Processing catastrophic news, an eye for an eye concept, just all these different things. Why don't psychics win the lottery? The acceleration of time, doing a good job. The gift of food is love in action. She's just got a whole ton of things. 52 different sections to look at in there, which she has set up. You can either take it week by week, or you can just delve into the one that's applying to you at that time. And Tina, I'm going to let you share here for a minute or two anything that you have going on that you want our listeners to know about. Go ahead, share your website, how they can contact you.
Thank you so much. If someone wants to contact me, and I am finding people are contacting me literally from all over the world, it's kind of amazing. Thanks to people like you, Jesse, I'm really grateful. I'm at TinaIrwin.com, and it's Irwin with an E. And it's The Lightworker's Guide to Healing Grief. If you have a grief situation, the Everyday Karma book are all available on the website. They're both in ebook format and print on demand. And the ghost stories from the ghost point of view will help you understand how important it is to help a loved one or the ghost that's haunting your house move into the light, and that you can be of great service. Also on this website, there is a blog that connects you to the blog, and I put out a blog every single week. And the one that's for this past week is on distributed power. If I teach you how to do something and you can do it and you can help all of these different people, that will help change the world. It's called distributed power. So I want to encourage everyone to enjoy the life they're living. It's truly precious. And to be grateful that there are occasions like this when you can be You can have access to the information that Jessie's sharing, not just with me, but for so many other guests who are fortunate enough to be on her show. Jessie, I want to thank you for having me and for sharing your concepts of compassion with so many people and for letting me be a guest on your show. I am deeply grateful. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, as always, and, you know, your work is fantastic. You have so much to share with people, and one of the things I love about your work is that it's put in terms where anybody can understand it. You know, it's put in those everyday terms, and I find that something is so important. And I've read now two of your books, and I absolutely love them because when I read them and I go through your work, I sit there and go, yep, that's it, you know. And it just kind of sends some of those little light bulbs and those little light switches off or on, you know, it turns them on for you. And it's a great, great gift that you're sharing with us and that you're putting out there. So thank you very, very much for being here. I very much appreciate your time here tonight.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for all the work that you do and sharing the concepts of compassion. We need everyone like you out there and all the listeners who are applying the things they hear on your show.
And that is the key. Take them and apply them. It's not just, you know, you can come in here and we have great concepts week after week after week, but it does taking those concepts out and actually applying them in order for them to work in your life. Now, next week on the show, I am going to have Marla Gates on, and Marla is going to be sharing her knowledge in spring cleaning organically, so ways that we can clean our homes and take care of our yards in organic ways, living an organic lifestyle. Also coming up on April 12th, I will be sharing with you the spiritual concepts and music of Grammy nominee for Best New Age Artist, Stephen Halpern. We're going to be listening to his music. We're going to be listening to his concepts. Absolutely wonderful person that made a big difference in my life when I stepped on to my path over 30 years ago. And I also want to share with you that I do have my next set of books coming out, which are based on relationships. They'll be available for purchase in the next 2 to 4 weeks. And this is a look at how to find and develop a relationship with somebody that will last a lifetime with you. It is a look at how we take on masculine and feminine roles, and no matter what sex we are born into, we take those different roles on in different areas of our relationships. I'm working also on putting together the 2013 Compassion Tour, and if you'd like to find out more about the work I'm doing with Compassion, whether you want to connect with me, check out my blog, purchase products or services that I offer, or find ways to connect with me, or listen to the archive shows or see upcoming shows, I've also got video tips available to you. You can find all of those things on my website. That's JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1. That's the number one, .com. And there's also a great section on there for Main Street Universe where you can follow all of the hosts that are here on Main Street Universe, catch upcoming shows and archived shows as well. Each host has a page so you can kind of get to know them a little bit and learn a little bit about the people that are here bringing you these shows every day of the week, basically, here on Main Street Universe. So it's all listed at the bottom of today's show description for that. My book is available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com for paperback, also through Smashwords as an ebook, including Kindle and PDF. I want to remind you as a listener, either live or in the archives, of Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. I'm offering 50% off of one-hour coaching sessions through the end of March. You can send me, just go onto the website. You'll find right where to click the promo code for that. And at April, I will be shifting that to a new special, which I do plan to provide a discount for both printed and ebook versions of my books, Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the Workbook. You can stay up on show specials and archives and YouTube tips, all of that at the website. Don't forget that we've got several shows right here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights, we have Darren Bouquer, who's a reader at Madame Louveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. Monday nights is Kevin Baird walking on the sidewalk with his Horizon Oracle Journeys deck, which is a deck he created himself. Tuesday nights is Inner Wisdom with Mary Phelan. Wednesday nights, we have Daniel and Janice on our flagship show called Main Street Universe.
And I will actually be co-hosting this upcoming Wednesday with them. And Janice will be the main host for the show. We're delving into part two of a two-part show on hair. Last week we discussed how to go green with your hair care and had Mimi with the Green Hair Company on, sharing her insights. And this week we're going to be talking about the spiritual and energetic properties on hair, and that's this upcoming Wednesday. This is Jessie Ann Nichols, George. I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. I look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into activating compassion. Don't forget that if you have enjoyed my show this evening, share it with others. It's going to be available at the same link in our archives. I'm going to leave you with the song tonight, Yearning For, also known as Over and Over by Shem Shai. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week.
And if I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind, and to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with season of change inside. And we are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon.
Back now. For over and over, life is your love.